Welcome, everyone. Today, I am with Darren Rovell, who is the CNBC's sports business reporter. And if for anyone listening, if you don't know Darren, then you probably aren't a reader of my site, or you're not in the sports world, because he is probably one of the most recognized personalities, sports reporters there are on sports business. So it's pretty much a huge pleasure for me to be talking with him today, and just want to tell a little bit about his background before we get going. But he's responsible for both analyzing and reporting on sports business world on CNBC's programming, including Squawk Box, Power Lunch, and Street Signs. But he's also interviewed some of the top athletes and personalities, including Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Maria Sharapova, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Michael Phelps, also coaches like, he's been with Jerry Jones, Boston Red Sox owners, NBC commissioner David Stern, and pretty much the list goes on. If there's anyone important in the sports world, he's interviewed them. He knows them. He knows everything about them. He knows what they eat for breakfast. So, Darren, are you there, my man?
Yes, let's get to work, Lewis. Let's talk.
Awesome. Well, we're doing this interview, one, because you won the top sports social media professional of the year for my site. So I wanted to say congratulations for that.
And thank you. I'm humbled by that. It's very exciting.
And there was I think there were over 2,500 votes within about 5 days. And you got, when you tweeted it out and you said something like, you tweeted it out, which I was hoping you would, but I wasn't sure if you would because I wasn't sure. But you tweeted out saying, like, if you like what I do on Twitter, go ahead and vote for me here with a link. You didn't say my name or Sports Network, so I didn't know this until about an hour afterwards, and I saw like 1,000 votes for your name. I was like, oh my gosh, he had to have tweeted this. So I checked it out, and I was like, wow.
And then people were telling me that that the site didn't work, and I was like, no, you're just probably hammering it a little bit. So
yeah, it was pretty impressive, and that's when I realized that, you know, I knew you had a powerful following on Twitter. You've got about currently 45,000, according to Twitter, counter.com. You've got some other cool stats on there. I don't know if you've checked twittercounter.com.
I've never checked, actually.
It's pretty cool, and I'll give you some stats during this interview. But you've got about 45,000 roughly right now, and I've got, personally, I've got around 41,000, but I don't get nearly a fraction of the exposure and the traffic that you get. So it's pretty amazing. So we want to talk about how you kind of got that exposure and you get your fans really riled up about the information you present. But when you've got 13,000 new followers in the last 3 months, so your following is kind of skyrocketed. It's growing exponentially right now, which is impressive also. And I remember when you first were on, probably in the first couple months, you were actually Darren Rovell 1. Now, why did you start off with Darren Rovell 1? Was it because Darren Rovell was taken, or?
Yeah, someone took it, like a fake sports business guy. Someone took it, and I guess I didn't really care. And then I realized, wait a second, I need that one character, because Twitter's 140 characters, but really if you want to be retweeted, it's really about 115.
Exactly.
And so I wanted that character back, and Gary Vaynerchuk actually helped me get the one off. And it was pretty impressive. Within 24 hours, I was back to my Darren Rovell. And I think it's been valuable just because you don't have to say one. And again, it does save you that that character. Every character matters.
Now, why did you start off with Darren Rovell as opposed to, you know, at sports or at CNBC Sports Biz or something like that?
You know, I think that I just wanted it to be my name. I didn't really think much about it, to be honest with you. I realized, I think, in about April 09 that I had to get on this thing and that it was going to be very important for me. And then by June, I had gotten rid of all my RSS feeds, and I had stopped going to websites. There had been enough that I could bring to me that I didn't have to go to it anymore. And, I ignored all the noise from the detractors who said that this wasn't a tool for the future. Because, you know what, if this wasn't the next big thing, then I'll move to the next big thing quicker than I moved to Twitter. And every time one of these studies comes out, I don't care if I'm in the 8% that tweets regularly. I don't care if I'm in the small minority. Twitter still really works. And the bottom line is, it's not a time waster. It's a time saver for me.
Right. And you've gone, you know, I'm looking at some of your stats still on Twitter counter, and your average of tweets per day has increased slowly over the last 3 months. And you know, you weren't as active early on, obviously, in April of 09, whenever you started. You weren't that frequent, maybe a couple tweets a day, is that right? Were you tweeting a couple tweets a day, or was it,
Yeah,
yeah.
and now I've done more.
Now,
Yeah, I mean maybe once or twice a day.
I see some days you have 55 tweets, like in December. Some days you know, it's kind of going up. It's increasing each month a little bit, but more and more you're tweeting. And why is it that you're tweeting more often? Is it because there's more news to
Because I've
break,
tested.
or?
No. I tested the limits. I basically found that in the early going, people, you know, for me, this is journalism, and it's like I'm taking the cannon line, make every shot a power shot, make every tweet a power tweet, make every time something comes into my box, every time I'm on someone's timeline, I want them to perk up and say, "Up, oh, here comes something from Darren Revelle." I don't want "here comes another from Darren Revelle," and so. I think that's the reason why. I think over time, I have gained. I think I know what I'm doing more than I did before. I didn't have as much confidence. I think people are less likely to unfollow me. I don't have. I might have 55 tweets in a day, but maybe 20 are really smart.
I like it though because it seems like, you know, those 20 are
You
all
know.
they're all.
So.
You there? You there, Darren? Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm here.
I was going to say I like that, you know, the 20 that you have that are really smart, they're kind of like headlines. They're really captivating headlines. There's one right here that's if you haven't seen the big fight in the Lingerie's Football League, click here. Is this the league's biggest moment? So you're kind of intriguing people, you're enticing people to click, and you've got pictures that you're posting that get thousands of views. You said you got one that had 40,000 views with Karl Malone eating a sandwich or something like that. Is that correct, or?
Yeah, I got an exclusive of the Nike uniform for the BCS of the Oregon uniform that got 72,000
Oh my gosh.
views. I got some Under Armour shoes for the Auburn game. You know, I've pushed. Give me an exclusive twit pick, and that's the new thing. And I think both Nike and Under Armour played that game with me, and Under Armour on their shoes got over 120,000 hits
Jeez.
on that. So, you know,
That's
I mean, as long as media can go along with me and understand that that's as valuable. Now, I have to do my job at CNBC to make sure that it goes back to CNBC and is not just my brand building. For example, today, you know, I broke a story on Tim Tebow not going with Gatorade but going with FRS energy drink. And what I do is I send the article to CNBC.com. They work it up. I go on air. They press the button. I come back and put it on Twitter. Now, there's been times where I've gone on the air. People do watch CNBC, and they've kind of de facto broken it because I couldn't get back to my computer fast enough, or the dot-com person didn't push the button fast enough. That happens, but I realize that's just part of the system that I have to abide by.
Right. What other limitations do you have with your tweets from, with CNBC, and would you say things differently if you weren't with the company?
For the most part, I have to be classy. I can't be cursing. I can't do anything I wouldn't do in a blog. I probably keep my tweets to about 90% business and 10% personal. When I started, it was 100% business. And then I realized people do like the personal ones if they're smart.
And you said you got a picture of you losing weight, and you got a lot of views on that, correct?
Yeah, no, for my documentary, I said I gained 12
Gotcha.
pounds. Please watch my show. Look how fat I got. And it got 25,000 clicks of me eating a donut in a, you know, in a Dunkin' Donuts
Gotcha.
factory. So I think people want to use Twitter to get to know you a little bit, and that certainly happened.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean the personal side of things, they want to know who you are. I mean, they're watching all the time, they're getting your blog posts, your tweets, so they want to know more about you, obviously, which helps them grow the audience. So, let's talk about your favorite athletes on Twitter and what do you think's made them so successful?
I think Shaq's kind of slowed down, but
Yep.
originally he was one of my favorites.
Sure.
Obviously, I think Lance Armstrong's done a good job. I do think, for the most part, it's really embarrassing. The athletes are just not good.
Okay, for example,
On Twitter.
who do you recommend in that? Who's not
Who
there?
am I dissing now? Who is
Yeah.
not good?
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't diss anyone, but I would say for the most part, they use Twitter the wrong way.
Gotcha.
And when they are good, it's not them. So, I have a hard time. I started to get excited about Tiger, and then, kind of there's a letdown. I started to get excited about LeBron, and it's been okay.
He's been posting some videos and pictures of him working out, kind of behind the scenes, correct?
That's good. Now, there is a situation that's interesting where, LeBron is now following me. Okay? So, it's interesting, how do you not let that change you? And that's a tough challenge because, think about me being on TV and knowing that a particular athlete that I'm talking about is watching me. I mean, that's almost like a LeBron thing. So I have, Andy Roddick, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Lance Armstrong, those guys following me, and it's kind of like every time I think I might be tweeting too much, I think of those guys and I want to keep their follow. And
Gotcha.
am I clouding? Are they going to say, we got to get rid of this Ravel guy? But I think it does help because I think it also leads to their respect because now they look at everything, or at least are seeing everything I'm doing, and are almost forced to because it goes in their timeline. And I think I might be closer with a couple more athletes because they respect what I do.
Sure, and just to give the, I guess the listeners a reason why you'd want them to follow you, is it because, or continue to follow you, is it because so you can kind of one of the exclusive insiders when you interview them, or they're just, is it better to be friends with these guys when you're doing interviews, or what's the main reason for that?
Why do I want Roddick and all those guys to continue to follow me? Because I think I'm closer to them. I think that I can, maybe I can direct. So before the Knicks game, I direct messaged LeBron. And the one he had a whole thing which I really actually liked that he got ribbed for. What bag should I bring to the game? And I wanted to know what brand of bag it was. And I direct messaged him, and he told me the brand. And I said, "Good luck tonight." And he said, "Thanks, man."
Wow,
Now,
that's
that's direct
powerful.
message. I don't know LeBron's email, and I don't know his cell phone.
Wow.
But because he's following me and I'm following him, maybe the next time I say, "Yeah, media, any way we could, meet up, at half court, like 20 minutes before the game, see if we can just have a 2-minute thing." So
Wow.
I think that's important. It's
That's
just a way to
powerful.
contact these guys.
That's like instant access. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not like they're giving you their cell phone number, all these guys, so it's to have
No,
access to their.
but he respects me enough that he follows me.
That's
It's
great.
really him. And I think, you can communicate with these people. When I spoke to Kobe 2 weeks ago in New Jersey, and I gave his agent Rob Pelinka a heads up that I'll be there. But that's all I can do.
Sure.
If Kobe was on Twitter, I don't have his cell, I don't have his email. I waited around in the locker room and waited and waited and waited, and luckily I got him. But I could almost kind of text him if I had the access to direct message him.
Right. That's pretty cool. What's your favorite sports brand on Twitter then, and how are they doing it right in your mind? Either sports brand or team or property.
StubHub does an amazing job. I mean, they recognize that their people love their data, and so they feed me tons of stuff, and they do a very good job. People like information.
Gotcha.
Nike does good. I asked them to send me the Kobe 6 shoe today so I could take a picture of it. Nike does a very nice job.
Wow.
Again, embarrassing though. Again, embarrassing. Teams are not, you know, are just still not there. The Jets with Matt Higgins and what he's put together. I mean, I know you interviewed him over the past 4 months. I mean, he has fallen in love with Twitter, learned it, and done an incredible job with the one push button to follow the team. I think that's very smart, and he gives access to brands that the Jets are involved with to that, and I, as a value added, and I'm very impressed with what they've done. But for the most part, sports teams, sports brands, everyone still needs a whole lot of help.
What do you think has taken, I guess, athletes and sports teams or brands so long to use social media and Twitter in their marketing mix?
The environment isn't bad enough. They're used to their old ways, and they still think they can get away with their old ways. Who are the teams that are who's the most active? I mean, the most active are guys like, you know, Ian Poulter, who is on the edge of being, you know, famous. I mean, he is obviously across the pond, or Stuart Sink, you know. I mean, those guys have a reason to go for relevancy. Right. If you're already there, the New York Yankees, you know, Tiger Woods, they don't have a drive to continue to build their brand, unfortunately,
right,
in this space, because it's almost like it's not needed or it's not necessary. I think necessity pulls these guys in, and that's why in my predictions for this upcoming year, I think that social media coordinator is the best job that will open up on sports teams. And I know you do a lot with, you know, what the future is and how young people can get jobs in sports, and I don't think that's going to be on a job posting. You have to show how you do it,
right?
And I think a lot of people will get that job if they're good, as guys like Ben Malcolmson, who's at the Seahawks.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, that was my next question is, what do you see as the biggest trend in terms of social media and sports, and I guess next year, and then the next 3 to 5 years? So you say social media manager for teams for next year, but what about the following years? What do you think?
The next 5 years is, you know, giving the power over to the fan. Opening everything up. You know, the Big Ten just had a logo and division name crisis, you know, because they waited for the fan reaction after they had an ad firm come up with them. I'm sorry, ad firms, but that's not the future. The future is the wisdom of crowds.
Right.
The future is they decide. And maybe in some cases that's not the right decision, because then the Big Ten will have two divisions, Ohio State and Michigan. Mm. But, you know, at the end of the day, people are going to decide. So 5 years from now, I would be disappointed if I got my schedule for the New York Mets and they told me every promotion. I would want, as a fan, to try to have a contest for 3 or 4 promotions for me to do it. Now, I don't want to take the job away from the promotions guy, but, you know, I think the fans have power. And what I've learned on Twitter is the crowd is smarter than me. So, you know, when I do headline contests, which is kind of one of those things that I've come up with after a big, usually football win, write the headline, and I get 300 submissions, and in 2 minutes, the crowd on Twitter and my followers has come up with a better headline than the New York Post will come up with the next day.
Wow.
It's almost disappointing. So you know, I think that teams and people have to get rid of their egos and learn to cede control over to the crowds.
Mm. Gotcha. I know you got to get on air in a few minutes, so I'll ask a couple more last questions, and we'll wrap things up. And let's talk about athletes and teams profiting with their social media, with their sponsors. Do you feel like they're getting the most out of sponsors, or do you think that the athletes and teams with, you know, the millions and millions of fans following them online could be leveraging that more to increase sponsorship dollars?
I don't know if there's a direct ROI. I'm not sure about that. But it is certainly a value added, and again, not that many people are seeing the value added. It's a throw in, you know. And I'm certainly interested to see what the Suns just did, which is, you know, offering a social media package as part of a one game suite package, and then giving access to Twitter and Facebook to their fans as an entree to future sponsorship, or is that stupid? Is that giving too much? Why does someone who had never had the relationship deserve access to your customers? So, you know, I think there's a lot of things, and I hope that teams and athletes are testing these things and not just, you know, being scared. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry about that. I just lost you for a quick second.
Okay.
So let's go into the next thing really quick. Last two questions. How has Twitter and social media, or athletes and brands connecting directly to their fans, impacted sports industry as a whole?
Again, I think it's getting closer. Yeah, I can.
Sorry,
can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry. This New Zealand connection.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry.
I think it's ultimately about getting closer.
Mm.
I think it's about, you know, the fans getting further and further from the athlete, and it being tougher for more fans to want to get to these athletes and to experience what they experience. And at the same time, feel close. And, you know, a fan feels like they own a piece of the team, even though they don't.
Right.
And sometimes fans are more crazy than the owners. And I think the worst thing is that if you have a good team, but, you know, the fans don't really know the guys. And admittedly, over the past 15 years, we as fans have been pushed further and further away from the playing field.
Hmm. Gotcha. Okay. So last question, or last question and a half, what challenges do you face as a reporter with the news being broadcasted instantly from athletes now?
The challenges aren't as great as I thought they would be. You know, in the mid to late 90s, Broadband Direct came out. And it was all about, you know, these athletes having their own websites, and they would put the news out. And what would happen to journalists, and that didn't materialize. And I think for the most part, athletes are not interested in putting their own news out.
Gotcha.
on a daily basis. I'm more worried about people who get rumors and post them as fact, and then maybe that comes true, and then, you know, someone like me is saying, well, you know, I needed two sources. I have to think about constantly the brand that I've built in CNBC, and they don't. And they really got to watch it on Twitter, because, you know, someone would say ESPN Radio is reporting that Magic Johnson wants to own a team in Los Angeles, and he wants to partner, blah, blah, blah. He's going to buy the Jaguars and move to L.A. And then I direct message that person and say, is that what they're reporting? And the guy says, that's what my friend said.
Mm.
So imagine if I RT'd that.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, that
looked bad. I had the unfortunate circumstance of RTing something once that was false, and it was attributed to me, and I will forever learn about that.
Yeah. So what's in store for you in the next year or years to come with CNBC or beyond?
Yeah, just keep going at it, you know? I mean, that's really the theme. Just keep going at it and keep being a force in all forms of media and try to keep pace with this crazy world.
Awesome stuff. Well, where can people find you online besides Twitter, which is at
DarrenRavel.com is the quick link to my blog. On Twitter, is just Darren Ravel. I don't use Facebook. I use it for personal reasons, but not for work. I haven't done the hookup thing.
Gotcha.
With Twitter and Facebook. So, but it's great to be in this world. It's very exciting. And thank you for the honor. Thank you.
Yeah, I was just gonna say congrats for being top sports social media professional in 2010, and thanks for the interview. And we'll see you on Twitter.
You got it. Thank you, Lewis.
Thanks, my friend.